is the podcast to the show. You can listen to or know.
Welcome to our Ted Lasso talk, the Tedcast. Welcome, all Greyhound fans. Welcome, all you sinners from the dog track, and all the AFC Richmond fans around the world. It's the Lasso way around these parts with Coach Coach and Boss. Without further ado, Coach Castleton.
Okay, welcome back, beautiful people. Today we are discussing Ted Lasso, Season 2, Episode 12, Inverting the Pyramid of Success. This is Part 7. Part 7. And this might be it. I am your host, Coach Castleton. With me, as always, is Coach Bishop.
We are going up. We are going up.
And with us is our boss, Emily Chambers.
This has nothing to do with Ted Lasso whatsoever, but it is a fact that I learned today that's continuing to blow my mind. Do you guys know who voices Mr. Krabs from SpongeBob SquarePants?
No idea.
Oh, damn it. I knew that. Go ahead. Tell me.
Fucking Clancy Brown.
Yes.
The weirdest thing for me. Yes. For those who are not familiar, Clancy Brown is an extremely prolific actor. He was in Highlander. He was the head guard in The Shawshank Redemption. He was in one episode of Sleepy Hollow, which should have been much better than the ending seasons of Sleepy Hollow were. He is exactly the, I should say younger Clancy Brown. He's a bit old for me. But younger Clancy Brown is exactly the kind of Coach Beard, Daniel Stern sort of kind of weird looking, but in a hot way type thing. Like pictures of young Clancy Brown, for sure. And it turns out the motherfucker has been on SpongeBob SquarePants all these years. I'm losing my mind over it. It's the wildest shit.
You would have had me sitting here guessing for the rest of time. I mean, like, what? That makes no sense.
He is a large, seemingly, he can be a large, intimidating man. Like, he plays rough guys, and here he is being a fucking crab near a pineapple under the sea. I saw it on one of the social medias, and I was like, that is a joke. Is it? It's past April Fool's, and I fucking hate April Fool's, so I know it's not that. And then it was real. It's fucking bizarre.
She really does hate April Fools, folks.
We've actually discussed this. I fucking hate April Fools.
Oh, wait, why? Remind me why?
No. It's going to make you sad. I'm going to go ahead and tell all of our listeners. I just, out of principle, I hate it. That is not the purpose of lying. People do it poorly. Pranks are stupid. There is nothing about the holiday itself that I care for. It doesn't make any sense to me. It is a day where people lie in order not to get things or make themselves sound good, but just so that somebody thinks something for a second before you reveal to them the truth. It's the stupidest fucking thing. But what Coach was talking about is that one of our mutual buddies sent me a Christmas card when I was back at my old place, the studio apartment, which I didn't decorate at all. I decorated none. I put no things on the wall. I did hang his Christmas card with him and his wife and their beautiful child on my refrigerator with a magnet. And then when I was moving out, I took a picture, I texted him, I explained that he was the only decoration in my apartment. And then a few days later, he texted back, "I just noticed this, but I'm also realizing the day you sent it, and maybe I shouldn't believe it." And that's when I realized I had sent it on April 1st. And I wrote back, "Hey, buddy, my dad killed himself on February 14th, and Valentine's is still only my second least favorite holiday. I do not fuck with April Fools."
Wow.
And I stand by all of that. I fucking mean it. I hate April Fools.
I am as awestruck this time as I was last time. That, I mean, God damn. I mean, like, there's so many levels. The fact that that's true, the fact it's that true. You are able to articulate it in such a pithy, powerful manner. There's a lot there, man. I'll love it next time. I hope we bump into somebody else who don't know that story. That is just great.
I really mean it. I fucking hate April Fools. But anyway, Clancy Brown, good looking.
You know, I'm scrolling through Clancy Brown's filmography here, and it's just on first glance, it's going to be close. He's done so much voice work that it might outnumber like Clone Wars, Lego Batman, obviously, you know, Kung Fu Panda, Pound Puppies, SpongeBob, Wander Over Yonder, Doom Patrol. These are all animated. Robot Chicken. I'm like Family Guy.
He was on The Last Airbender.
Rick and Morty. Last Airbender. Yeah, I'm just like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Sheriff Callie's Wild West. Pickle and Peanut. I'm just like, God damn. I cannot believe how much work.
Yeah,
I knew he was in everything.
Constantly working.
Everybody knows him as Captain Hadley from
Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank, mm-hmm. Right. Or the Kurgan from Highlander. Mm-hmm. But he's been in it. Man.
And also, to my discredit, I just said attractive when he was younger. I should mention, I did see some stills. I didn't watch the newest Star Wars show. Oh, shit. I'm going to...
Ahsoka.
Yes. He was in that. Didn't look bad in that either. I mean, come on. I can't pretend that I know I would say no.
All right.
There's a... Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Listen. He's a talented son of a gun. Tales of the Jedi. I mentioned Tales of the Sith coming out in just a few days now. May the 4th. Everyone should watch. Anyway, if you're a Star Wars fan, Tales of the Jedi is outstanding. Okay. Let us jump into Ted Lasso. When we left, Nate had ripped up the sign. The guys were out cheering. We know we are. We're sure we are. And then Higgy Baby comes in and sort of flags down Sam in the corner. And I'm like, you know, can I just enjoy him? I'm like, why is he getting pulled out? Oh yeah. Oh, right.
Business is business.
And I'm like, right now, right business, now,
baby.
I hate
it. There's a billionaire waiting on you. You know, they're going to come get you.
Yeah. Make him wait.
Yeah. There's a lot of that going on in the world. People just telling billionaires, hold your horses.
There should be.
Yeah, I'm not saying there should be. There's a lot more of it. Well, the recent layoffs at Tesla, somebody should have said it, but there you go.
Yeah. Billionaires do hire people to hold their horses for them, so they don't have to worry about it too much.
That part.
I mean, are we thinking that billionaires, if you take the whole cross section of billionaires and put it up against the cross section of society, that billionaires are better?
Wait, what?
Well, they have more money, so.
Yeah.
No. I'm talking like. Just like they're whatever. Just to get to be.
We treat them better. Does that make them somehow intrinsically or inherently better? No, but that doesn't have anything to do with.
Yeah. I mean,
who's a better person? Sam Obasanya, who is not a billionaire, or Edwin Akufo?
But by what measure? That's the trouble we always run into.
And in what language? And by what measure? Yeah. And what religion?
Yeah. And I mean, I would argue that the bigger issue is that, In the U.S., at least, what we do is say these specific characteristics make you a quote-unquote good person. And I say that because I'm not into this vibes-based sort of morality where it's like, oh, well, they seem really nice. Therefore, I think that they're a good person. It's like, well, what did you do? What did you do today to be a good person? In which way did you improve things? Okay. Or in which way did you stay the fuck out of everybody else's way so you didn't make things worse for them? So good is a hard thing to define. The things that we say make you a good person do not make you a billionaire. Although then U.S. society also exalts billionaires because we're all fucked up in almost every conceivable way. Billionaires are statistically more likely to be sociopaths and to actually have sadistic tendencies. Like they are more likely to be willing to hurt other people than your average person. And we said
that's what I'm saying.
This yes.
So make them wait.
No, but make that's not how it works, sir.
No,
no
I know.
One makes a billionaire wait for anything. I'm trying to think of an example of somebody making a billionaire wait for something. I'm actually right now actively trying to think about that, and I can't think of a single time.
One of Juliana's friends was dating a billionaire, and I have had Cobb salads with more personality than this guy.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't, and everybody tiptoes around him. And you know what I mean? I was like, oh my God. Like, I made him wait. I made him wait. That's my new rule. If I meet a billionaire, they're going to fucking wait. I'll tell you right now, coach, I'm doing it every single time. I haven't met a billionaire. I've met a few of them. I've met four billionaires in my life.
I see.
And it's not that, it's not, whatever. It doesn't.
You know what?
I've only talked to three of them. One, it was just like a handshake, but still none of them were that impressive at all.
I usually I know that you and I don't see exactly eye to eye on this stuff, but I actually 100% agree with you. And in solidarity, the next time that I meet a thousandaire, I'm just going to make them wait. Because you know what?
No. I like that.
They're probably
what? They're probably lovely people. Hundredaires. Hundredaires are my people.
I mean, there's no fucking way I'm meeting a billionaire. There is no world in which I am meeting a billionaire. It's not going to happen. If I meet a millionaire, and I don't even know, I don't know if I would know that they're a millionaire. I'd probably treat them like shit, but that's just how I do general
life.
Just
copy that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 No. Yeah. Well. Yeah. I don't know. Listen, I was trying to think. How do I know? How have I met so many billionaires? I'm not wealthy. So one of them was through when I went to college. I went to private schools because I had a sports scholarship and then also an academic scholarship. And so, you know, I went to some schools that we probably couldn't afford at the time, and a lot of the kids of those people, you know, have their names on buildings and stuff like that. So I met a couple that way. And then Juliana went to Harvard, and so I met the other one that way, and then one in the film industry. That was a good, I told you about that one though. I think All right. So there was this one really quick. We got to get to Ted Lasso, but there was this moment where we got invited to, it was when,
Jesus,
it was when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor of California, when he was the governator.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so I don't know how we got invited to this bit, but it was his birthday party. And it was this big thing in Brentwood. And I just got a job as a writer for this, it was my first screenplay I ever sold. And it's a really exciting thing. When you first sell a screenplay in Hollywood, you're like, oh my God. You know, it really feels like it's a big deal. And I remember in this meeting, so I was had all these impressions of what it was going to be like to be in Hollywood. And, you know, and I remember my first meeting, big meeting. I was so nervous. And, you know, I went into this production company and, you know, you just have all these preconceived notions of what, Hollywood is. And I remember that the guy who owned the production company was picking at pimples and he had his shoes off and remember his socks going back and forth and I was like, this is not
what I was picturing.
A lot less cool.
The glamour is missing.
Yeah. So that was he ended up buying my screenplay. And then I had, this relationship what you have in Hollywood, which is, you have a contract and there's Writers Guild minimums and, you know, it's more than I had ever made in my life. But then it gets contentious because you give them a draft and they're like, this doesn't count as a technical draft. You know, what coach could tell you, he's already shaking his head, but just this whole sort of whatever. So Julianne and I go to this party. I set this up to say the production company owner, you know, he said his name, you know, he's made 100 movies probably. But it wasn't awesome to me. And so we go to this governor's party and that's where I met the other billionaire who was hosting it and at his house in Brentwood. And then I was like, this is nauseating. I wanted to go just to go. Juliana didn't want to go, but I was like, you know, I just want to see what this is. It'll be good for writing. This is what we talked about last episode, the pitfalls of dating a writer, because you just want to experience everything. And you say I want this again. Look at it. I can talk about it now. If I didn't go, I wouldn't be able to talk about it. So we go out and you had to valet your car because, you know, it's a neighborhood basically. And so Jillian and I are at the front of the line waiting for our car to get dropped off. And this Bentley pulls up onto the street. It's in Brentwood. Bentley pulls. I never told you guys this. Bentley pulls up and it's this big time producer. And he's like, he calls me over. He's like, hey, he's like, come here. And I go up to the driver's door of his car. He's got his window down. He's like, what's going on here? This is my neighborhood. He's like, I live like right over there. And I was like, oh. I was like, it's the governor's birthday party. Didn't you get in that?
Woo! All right, that's pretty
good. And he put his window up and drove away. And I've literally never talked to the guy since.
I mean.
But it was a great, it was a, Julian, I was like, you did not. Yeah. You'll never work for that production company again. No. But
whatever. You definitely pissed in that punch bowl. But yeah, I hear you.
Does seem like it was worth it.
It was fantastic. It was so great.
Because we talked just a bit about billionaires and the morality associated with that, I need to mention there are a couple of very weird things, and then I promise we'll move on. But number one is that very often your contentment with your own life is not how much money you individually have, but how much money you have compared to the people that you consider your peers. So in your case, Castleton, when you were going to a prep school, but going on a scholarship and going, you know, not boarding there, not staying there, I'm sure that the difference might have been very accentuated for you.
It was a gulf.
I will say that there is a weird gulf for me because the private schools in the Chicago suburb where I grew up were exclusively religiously affiliated and only day schools. Like when you say prep schools, I'm like, that is some old timey English aristocratic bullshit. Like it is we had Holy Angels and Aurora Christian, and that was where you were going to private school. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't going to learn about Jesus, you weren't going to their fucking school. So it's like, even within the three of us now being here, it's you literally, you're talking about billionaires. Like I could theoretically go to a place where I might meet Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, who is the only billionaire I could name offhand who lives in Illinois. It's just, God bless the Midwest. We got nothing going on in here. Outside of Chicago. Funny. Chicago's fucking amazing.
That's interesting. Yeah.
No, it's true. And the Gulf is there. And you're right to say, you know, how are you compared to your peers? I remember like for spring break, I knew I would be going to work for my dad's factory. So like all my friends would go off and they would literally be going to Stad and Aspen, and they all had houses all over the world, but they were definitely going, if they weren't going to like, you know, some resort, they were going to another country for spring break. And I would get up the next morning super early to go into work with my dad, and he would save this big, they did a lot of die cutting. So they would have scrap rubber. And I remember the smell of the rubber. You'll never get it out of your nose. It's like when someone burns their tires, mm-hmm. burning type of rubber, that's what the factory smelled like all the time. But they would cut all of these things out of big sheets of rubber. And I would have to go measure the scrap rubber with calipers and sort it based on thickness to see if we could reuse part of it. And it was not, but it's fun. Hey, it's character building. But it's a different, it's a different experience than what most of my peers were up to.
Yeah, this is, God, I'm going to talk so much. It's because I was on the East Coast recently and there feels to be a certain level of character that is not developed in some of your Midwestern suburbs. Like everything, a suburb is built in like 10 years. So everything in a specific area is from 76 to 86, and everything looks the same and everything is very boring. There's not a lot to it. There are a shit ton of McDonald's. So I swear to God, number one, I did just have to look up what Stad is. Didn't know. Did not know what you were talking about there.
And I said it as if everyone knows. What is it?
I didn't find it. I was looking it up and then I had to start talking and I couldn't even spell it correctly.
It starts with a G.
Are you fucking kidding me?
G-S-T-A-A-D. It's a skiing, it's a city in Switzerland, but it's like a, you know, very exclusive.
No, I don't know, because it's so exclusive, I don't know about it.
This is what I'm trying to,
what I'm saying is that, like, when I was at U of I and people were going on spring break, which also I, of course, was not doing that because come on. But I swear to God, one of the things they were like, we found this new place. Cancun is over. Nobody's going to Cancun anymore. We're so past Cancun. Now we're going to South Padre Island. And they were like, that is the cool place. Like, that is where we're going to fucking hang out.
Jesus.
This is what I'm talking about. I need you to know, when you talk to me about, like, not being able to do anything, I exceed at not being able to do anything. I am so fucking far past most people. We're like, hell yeah. Let's fly through Brownsville, Texas on our way to vacation. That's what's up.
Yeah. No, listen, we got into this by saying, I think we should make billionaires wait. They're not superior. They're not better. You know what I mean? They're, in my experience, I met Malcolm Forbes one time, and he was like a blast. He was really like, he was as good as, he was about the very, very animated and huge personality and amazing. And sort of really, really, that was like the only, I guess, so five billionaires, I forgot about them. But so he was the only one that was like, big personality. But there was this one guy, the most recent one I met, the one before him. And it was like, we were at this, Juliana went to Harvard. So we went to these, every year they have like a Harvard, or it's every 5 years, class reunion kind of thing. Coach can probably talk about this at Yale too. And what's funny is, you know, they do these things like, oh, class of whatever, right? We were able to, our goal was to raise blah, blah, blah. And if you go to a regular college like I did, your goal is to raise like $75 from the whole class, right? But at the Ivies, they're like, our goal is like, we're trying to hit $200 million this year. And you're like, are you like, what did you just say? It's a preposterous number. And that's just what the class raised. And then as you dig into it, you find out like, oh, everyone else raised, $840,000. And then one billionaire gave, $100 million.
Right.
Because he's got a kid that's about to be legacied into the school, things like that. So anyway, but have you done that, Coach? Have you been to any of those fancy schmancy?
I have. I usually don't pay a ton of attention to the speeches that would include what you just said. But yes, I've been around for it, and I hear it and I get it. Yeah, it is outrageous, beyond outrage, the amount of money that's just sort of like strolling around campus. And sometimes I have to. It's a little different what you described in terms of billionaires specifically, but certainly political and public figures. Like I'll be like, oh yeah, I know so and so. Like I used to hang out. Like I have partied with the Attorney General of California, and was really great friends with even better friends with his wife, who's also a politician. I think of them as Robin Mielisa, and then suddenly someone brings it up and I'm like, he is the Attorney General of California. That is true. We have hung out at Harvard, Yale at a tailgate, and he now is a big fucking shot caller. And there are a bunch of people like that. But yeah, anyway.
In the infamous words of the great Van Halen 5150 album, contact is all it takes.
Hello, neighbor. Come on, now, that's a pull. That's a pull,
that was,
baby.
That was impressive. You did nice. Nice.
I do love that. Thank you, Coach. Ted Lasso. So Sam gets called out by Higgins. And then, boss, will you walk us through this interaction here, please?
Of course. So Sam walks into the room. Jesus Christ, why am I blanking on his name already?
Akufo.
Edwin, that's what I was thinking of. I kept wanting to call him Edward, not Edward. Edward, no. Edwin Akufo is saying, Sam, hey, Sam-o, hey, excellent performance. Yeah, the goal, of course.
Sam-o, by the way.
Oh, yeah, they're buddies.
They're though. Like, they're so like tight. Hey, Sam-o!
No. Nothing.
It's
you.
So Anyway, keep going. Sammo is worse in a couple minutes than it is right now, but keep going.
I think I mentioned on here, there are three people in the world that are allowed to call me Emmy, and you listening right now are not them. When people do that informally, somebody, it's so insulting when, like, I don't know anybody well enough and they try to become that familiar. Hey, Emmy. Nope.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. Anyway. Excellent performance.
Are Coach and I part of the three? Or
you could do it. I wouldn't get mad at you. I would say, like, oh, no, you could call me M, but, like, I wouldn't get mad. But no, not part of
M. M. Like Auntie M.
Yeah. I mean, I would call it Auntie M, but I just talked about how I'm from the culturalist Midwest. So, but yeah, no.
Right.
M is great. A lot of people, like, I'm in a lot of phones as M, and that's fine.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. I thought you were going to say, fuck no.
No, you wouldn't be doing it in an insulting way. You would try it and I'd be like, no, I don't really, that's not really what I go in for.
I would. Yeah. Coach wouldn't.
Yeah.
I would be trying to get a rise out of you. You would be trying to be an asshole. I would be putting it after a comma, like some, you know, sort of declarative statement. Like
you,
maybe wash your feet, comma. Mm-hmm. Emmy.
You would be doing it in the same way as our buddy who sent me the Christmas card. He found out that I don't want to be called Emma and would refer to me as that exclusively.
Got it.
But this is also why I sent him horrible texts about my father's suicide. So, like, fair play, Kurt. Hey, sorry about it.
Listen, no, yeah. You're playing full contact at this point. Here we go.
Come on. Excellent performance. Yeah, the goal, of course, speaks for itself. But your tactical discipline, hey, they're certainly going to miss you around here. And finally, Sam speaks up as, Mr. Okufo, I truly enjoyed meeting you, and I'm so flattered by your offer. I'm sorry, but my answer is no thank you. And I don't believe my time here at Richmond is over, and for that reason I have to stay. I hope you could understand. Which, of course, being a billionaire, Edwin Okufo totally understands and shouts.
Yeah, no, he's like, thank you. All right, we'll have a great day.
Gold class.
Here's $100,000.
You fun. Nigerian motherfucker. You Yoruba trash. Who the fuck do you think you are wasting my time? You medium talent piece of shit. And I love that they called out the medium talent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Medium talent. Yeah, that was great.
Well, so he goes Nigerian. He goes country. Then he goes tribe.
Yep.
You Yoruba piece of that's like, okay, here's the recent insult. Here's the ancient insult. Yeah. And then he's like, and I'm gonna insult your ability? Medium talent piece of shit.
Wait, but do we know about medium talent?
I don't.
It's one of my I refuse to believe that it isn't 100% accurate. I will not call it lore. But apparently on the set of Saturday Night Live, way back in the day, Bill Murray and Chevy Chase got into it. It almost came to blows.
Oh,
if it did not come to blows, yes. It almost came to blows.
I may have heard this story, but I don't remember the details. Go ahead.
I think we've said it on the show before. Yeah,
as they were dragging Bill Murray away, because Chevy Chase was the star. He was like, he was it. He was who everybody was there to see.
I'm Chevy Chase and you're not.
Yeah. And as they're dragging Bill Murray away, he shouts down the hall, medium talent at Chevy Chase. It's such a perfect insult. It's so fucking good.
Yes.
It is. I stole directly from that sort of vibe. A guy I went to high school with became my youngest brother's teacher. Like, he was right out of college, and my younger brother was...
I had a couple situations like that. Yep.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, John. Yeah, John Prochko. John Prochko is your teacher. And apparently, Prochko was giving him shit. I don't think because he knew me, but just because maybe my brother was an asshole. And I said, that's fine. Next time he yells at you, you tell him that his performance in Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat was mediocre at best. And
that
then just
is
leave
so
it. That's
wrong.
It.
That is so...
Wow. I was like, let me tell you exactly how to get that guy. Mediocre at best.
That is so wrong.
Shouldn't have been a dick. Don't be a dick. I will dedicate my life to destroying you, you fucking asshole. and you will never play on the Nigerian national team. Hmm? You understand? You understand me, Pinky Dick? Never. And I will buy your childhood home, and I will take a shit in every room, and then I will burn the place down. Yeah, then I will sit there, I will eat kinki, and I will poop on the fucking ashes. I promise you this.
No, we just like all that. So I'd like to return to our previous conversation about the practice of making billionaires wait. Is there anything about this reaction that suggests that he was going to patiently wait for anyone? Or the propensity of them
to be sociopaths? I mean, this is like
so mental. And not only that, but he starts out like it's. For me, what it points to that we all should keep in mind regarding all billionaires and those who claim billionaire status, no names used, is he'll say anything. Like, literally a minute ago, this man was fawning. Fawning is not too strong a word. And because he was told no, this is where we are. Like, Sam has not said anything else since he said, literally, no thank you. You could not be any more polite. Yeah. Or, I mean, that's his big transgression that this guy has lost his shit is, turns out I want to keep the job I have and not leave with you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I think even though he's making a big deal about it right now, Edwin will get over it. Oh, it seems like as he's leaving, he makes sure... I will never forget this disrespect. Fuck you, Sam Obasanya. Fucking dare. So maybe I was wrong. Maybe when he said, I will never forget this disrespect. You know what? Listen, I gotta respect somebody that holds a grudge.
That's a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So Francis goes for the fake handshake. Sam goes for it. And then, so Sam Richardson plays Edwin Akufo. Listen, it's really hard to do this kind of physical comedy. I don't know how much this landed, and I don't know the intelligence of like sort of finishing the season with it, but whatever. It was, it had to happen.
Interesting.
Sam Richardson sort of like, when he said, you know, I don't think my time at Richmond is done, like he had this like flare of his eyes while he was listening. Like, wait, you're about to say no to me? And it's like, dude, this is your number one draft pick. You're like, oh, you're the core of my – and listen, it's smart. You build a soccer team, you want midfielders. But, like, he go – the concept of, like, who are you to waste my time? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that is so – oh, my God. Oh. Man, that rubs me the wrong way. God damn, that rubs me the wrong way. I don't know if there's anything you can say. Like, because it's such an iniquity, and it's just like, are you – like, but he believes that. It's no different than, you know, like a caste system or, you know, one person thinking like, oh, I by virtue of whatever, fill in the blanks, I am a more important being on this planet than you. It's like, what the – it is crazy. We all die the same way. We all have, you know, we're all mortal. It just does not compute for me. But Akufo goes out and then he does this great. I think it's great. I think it's, again, I think it's great because it's very difficult to do and even harder to pull off. And he generally pulls it off. There's a mannequin with no head. He strangles it and very slowly brings it down to the ground. And slams it down on the ground. Then he squats over it and poops. And he yells, poop, poop. Gives him the finger. And then we're out.
Sam obviously
thinks he made the wrong
decision. Oh, well, clearly. I mean, you definitely want your future in the hands of this guy. I don't think it should be lost that Higgins is taking in the insanity down the hallway and then looking in through the window and the door at Sam. Because remember, for all Higgins knows, he's about to get the, hey, you've been great, but I'm going to go the other way. Like, Higgins doesn't know what the answer is. So he's right. finding the way he finds out that Sam is staying in Richmond is because Akufo is down the hallway pantomiming shitting on the head of a headless mannequin in a Richmond kit. That's how he got the news.
Yeah. And you have to think, like, a bunny rabbit like Higgins, this would be a lot of conflict. You figure Higgins probably, like, goes and sucks his thumb a little bit after this. Or, you know, he's like, Jesus Christ. Like, there's just a lot. It's just a lot. People who are this, sort of overtly attacky, you just go, wow.
You know, it's not the same thing. But I will say, I grew up. And I could rattle off scenes, and the details of them aren't as important as the overall. I grew up around a lot of chaos, like just in my life, like in the neighborhood, like people would be blowing up, yelling at people, you know, even in my own family. Like I can tell you a story of the time my brother threw a bottle at my father. I mean, it's crazy, right? It's just like fucking crazy. And there's something every once in a while I'm around someone who didn't grow up around that kind of chaos. When some chaos goes down, and I'm like, oh, poor thing. Like, I just want to hug, because I'm like, oh, yeah, you must feel like the world's coming to an end. No. Let's go grab lunch. It's fine. But it's not fine. Yep. It's actually not fine. I am the one who's out of the ordinary here. But I'm telling you, people getting, like, screaming matches, and I'm just like, I think I'll have the French toast. Like, I don't... Okay, whatever.
It doesn't affect you if you grew up in it. Boss talked about this a few episodes ago where conflict is... You know, it was funny, and I should have quoted this. There was a... I was reading some... Oh, damn it. But they were talking about conflict. I forget what I was reading. And they're like, conflict is the starting point of resolution. And so how you... And so Boss was saying, oh, listen, I don't mind like people yelling and getting... If they know that they're... You know, it's not like threat of physical violence or anything like that. She's Boss didn't mind in her own family a little, some raised voices or people digging in a little bit, because that's where, you know, that's how things are worked out in a lot of different families. But it is true when you have at least, you know, I grew up in a crazy house. Juliana grew up in not the opposite. They're the loveliest people in the world. And so I'm totally fine with like everything exploding around me. And, you know, it's just a weird, I don't know if it's an advantage, but I know it makes you not as shy around conflict. You know, you're not as affected.
I think it can be an advantage. I don't think it automatically gives you one, but it depends on how you want to roll with that. Like if you decide I have known people who've grown up in conflict that where instead of leaning into it and saying like, we can yell and fight and it'll be fine, they instead say, conflict is bad. I can't ever do it. And so then they become confrontation averse to the point where they will let things go even when they want to talk about them because they don't want to have the confrontation or the conflict. So I don't think it necessarily is one or the other. It's how you process it.
It's funny you mentioned that piece. The thing that I've often reacted to is... To me, okay, if there's a problem, we can have a conflict. I do worst, like the absolute worst scenario with me is someone who has a problem with me, doesn't have the conflict, but it's just this sort of ongoing hum of we got a problem here. Like there's definitely the portion of me, like that upbringing, there's a portion of me that brings me to, look, man, you got something to say, fucking say it. Like, there's a level to which I would appreciate, if I'm Sam, I appreciate Edwin losing his shit over walking out like we're good and then me hearing 2 months later that he said I was an asshole. Like, I was like, you got a problem with me now. If I find out the other way, now I got a problem with you.
Yeah. I swear to God, if he had, like, shaken Sam's hand and said, I'm so sorry to hear that, I'd have been fucking terrified. That means that he is coming back with some shit.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly, like, well, right?
Like, it would be much more of a power move.
Put it on the table.
It's very childish.
This blowing up nonsense, like, absolutely. If the quieter and quieter somebody gets, I'm like, I'm going to fucking die. Oh, they're gonna get me so good. It's good. If I ever get quiet around you, fucking
not good.
Board it up.
Board it up. I love it's like think of a riot and do everything you would do to get ready for said riot. And then maybe you'll be ready. That's great. Mm-hmm.
It's true.
So we cut from there to the appropriately, we cut to press conference. And Coach, walk us through. Ted is sitting at the front. Oh, okay, y'all. Hey, settle down, y'all. At this point, very reminiscent of Ted's first, a very nice bookend to Ted not being able to drink water. And Coach, walk us through this moment.
So y'all come on, calm down. All right. Look, well, right off the cricket bat here, I want to address the article written by our good friend Trent Krim from the, and he looks over at the seat where Trent's been all that time, and that seat is empty. The cameras are going, or rather, I want to share with y'all the truth about my recent struggles with anxiety. And well, my overall concern about the way we discuss and deal with mental health in athletics. I was really glad they put that in here. And I know we've had other yes. PSA moments that we thought, I was really, really glad they put that in here. I think, anyway, I've shared my own stories in terms of dealing with depression, anxiety, and so on. And I think there's just this fake, it's sort of another version of the faking that we're okay and shaking my hand and walking out. I think we do people a real disservice when we demand that they show us okay, no matter what they're actually experiencing. So, yeah. Anyway, I know it's a little PSA-y, but I was glad.
I'm such a fan. I every time some athlete talks about their mental health, I want to go to bat for them. One of my favorite football players of all time is a receiver named Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
And he got into so much shit growing up. He always made stupid decisions. He was just an idiot that put himself in bad spots. And all he's done once, I think what he got was a great wife. I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
It'll
is like he married up and she just opened his eyes. And all he's been working for years and years and years is mental health awareness. And he's been honest about his problems and honest about play. And I remember Nuke Hopkins is another receiver. One of the best receivers to ever play the game. And I remember him saying, yeah, I'm in therapy. Like it was this little thing. And I was like, wait, what? Like it's one thing to say it in the sporting community. It's another thing to say it in the Black community. And
yeah, there's levels to
that better than
yeah,
I can.
There's levels to it,
but there's levels, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anytime someone has that kind of bravery and that kind of honesty, it just, especially in the, you know, we talk about toxic masculinity, And where is it more prevalent than the NFL? And so to face those moments head on and talk about, you know, mental health is, you know, it's like when people split up healthcare and mental healthcare, it makes me, I just want
to I know. Say, I
what
know.
Part of basic human, you know, it's, I just do not get it. And every time people assume we know everything, doctors figure out something else. And again, Coach and I both were diagnosed with ADHD much later in our 40s. That we still have friends who roll their eyes and don't think it's real.
I know. But here's that is true, and that can be challenging sometimes. What I will share, if there's anybody out there who's struggling, or maybe you're in a circle where people are less open to the conversation and so on. For me, I made like humongous strides forward over the last few years, personally, like my own experience of life. And one of the key elements of that has been being able to just sit with the thing I'm actually feeling. I am pissed off. And I just sit here and be pissed off for a second. Now, sometimes that means go do something about the pissed off. Sometimes that means read a book. Sometimes that means take a nap, but just being with it. So I think one of the reasons I love this here, and I love Brandon Marshall, Luke Hopkins, and all the people who said, like, hold on a second, like, pay attention, is if you'll do that, then there's something you can do about it. And there's something you can be aware of and in charge of. And yes. whatever. And until you do that, then it comes out in all sorts of bizarre ways and people behave and they make you go, oh, wait, where are you? And I'm like, the number of drunken, you know, of hangover apologies in my life would be cut in half if I could have just spent some time going, all right, this is anxiety. Right. Yeah. But, you know, we encourage almost anything else. Like, I feel like there have been times in my lifetime where it would have been far more acceptable and far more bizarrely respectable to be getting in bar fights a couple times a week than to say, oh, yeah, once a week I go sit on, you know, sit in somebody's office and tell them what's going on with me. And that's insane. Oh, yeah. That is insane. No,
that is. Yeah. That's.
That part is incredibly insane. The other thing that bothers me so much about it is there is a very strong urge, especially in repressed, waspy Midwestern culture, to pretend that everything is fine, to ignore the issues, to not address them. If you don't pay attention to them, we'll be fine. Like, why are you talking about the bad thing? Talking about the bad thing calls attention to it. But there are also times where just saying out loud the bad thing robs it of its power. Like, the way to feel better is you say, I am afraid I'm not going to get this promotion and I don't know what's going to happen after that. And if you say it out loud to somebody else, they're like, either we'll come up with a game plan or how about if we just wait until we find that, like, we'll figure this out. So it's saying it out loud is so important in order to help you deal with it. And the fact that people are like, don't talk about your problems is the absolute worst fucking thing.
Yeah, no, it's funny because the cultures that have taken over big parts of the world are historically repressive and don't have a philosophy of open communication. You know what I mean? So it's like you're sort of fighting it everywhere you look, and it's like, oh man, point to a world system where openness and kindness and being honest about your limitations, especially as a man, is the norm. It's just like, it's so crazy how humans have allowed, you know, this to become a point of weakness instead of a point of strength. Insane. Boss, will you walk us through now, Ted? We cut from that scene to Rebecca's office. We get a shot of a single of Rebecca at her desk. And will you walk us through this, boss?
Yeah, absolutely. So after he gets done saying that, Ted comes up and says, hey, boss, just wanted to congratulate you on your promotion. And she says, you too, Ted. Champagne to celebrate? Says, no, I'll just take a glass of water, please. Big water day for him, apparently. And she jokingly kind of says, still or sparkling? He said, yes, still, right, yeah. You know, before living here, I used to think that still water was just folks saying that it was still water, you know, like it was water and it continues to remain to be water. At this point, I'm sure I've said it before, but call out Mitch Hedberg's phenomenal joke of, I used to do drugs. I still do, but I used to do them also.
Yes.
Because I fucking love that guy.
Oh my God.
Every fucking line was like that. So after that, she says, well, there is no greater education than travel. And he says, a freaking man.
It's like the most dismissive, like British. Well, anyway, so funny. So on brand for each one of them. Okay. Sorry. Keep going.
Says, so, well, hey, next season should be fun, right? That'll include an old friend. Rupert bought West Ham United. And he says, did he now? I said, well, that'll be a nice change, having our run-ins with him being scheduled, as opposed to his normal sneak attacks. And which, excellent point, because Rupert is an asshole and will intentionally show up at places that he shouldn't, when he shouldn't be there in order to ruin Rebecca's day.
Yeah, he's good. He's good with that.
He's great with that. That's a sure sign that he's over her and done with it.
It's funny, Ted and Keely had generally the same response about Rupert. We're like, oh, okay, this will standardize it a little bit more. It's funny that they both had that sort of.
Yeah, I I could actually see, though, that the surprise of a person would be somehow worse. I have said before that one of my favorite things about Jeremy Allen White going from being the love of my life as Lip Gallagher to being Carmen Burzatto on The Bear is that when he became when he started becoming a meme, when he started showing up like Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
It was like running into a crush, which is a thing that doesn't happen to you when you're a 43-year-old woman in a long-term relationship.
Right.
You never see somebody that you aren't expecting to see that you have feelings for. So like all of a sudden he would be on Twitter and there's in the same way, seeing somebody you hate when you weren't expecting to is not a pleasant surprise.
No. Especially when it's Rupert.
God, especially when it's fucking Rupert.
So Sam walks in and says, "Hi, Rebecca." Ted is now sitting on the couch and he sees Ted there
if everyone in the room had not known beforehand what was going on with them, everyone in the room would have known after this. I am hoping Ted would pick up on this at least.
For sure. Rebecca looks like a deer caught in the headlights. She's just kind of stuck. It's a great shot. Hannah Waddingham, man. Mm-hmm. She's so good. So she's just sitting there. Sam is about to peace out and he's like, sorry. And he's about to hit the dusty trail. Ted says, hey, Sam, go ahead, stick around. I was getting ready to leave. Rebecca says, no, Ted, stay. No, it's okay. So he sits down.
Why would you tell him it's okay to stay? Like, I mean, this is not how you make this less awkward. Like there's nothing.
It's just, it's just polite in one way, but it's also like trying to head off. Like, I don't know. It's so interesting. It's fine. I'm sure it's fine. I don't know. It's really, it's an interesting choice. He just sits down, super awkward. And then what happens here, boss?
Then he says, "Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I just wanted to let you both know that I've decided to stay." To which Ted says, "Hey, that's great, Sam." And Rebecca finally says, "Yes, I'm glad to hear that, Sam." How did
Rebecca breathe for the first time since he walked in there? Like she literally like exhales. He's like, "Oh, thank God." That's great, Sam.
Oh, that's great. Oh, okay. Whew. And then, of course, how did Edwin Okufo take the news? Not well. He stormed off. He's already halfway back to Ghana. Oh, shoot. I was really looking forward to getting that final goodbye handshake from Francis, is Ted's only response. Not that the billionaire who was here trying to form a professional team or poach one of their best players. None of that. Just, I was really looking forward to that other handshake.
Well, coach, Coach Bishop, God, I remember him so fondly. Mm-hmm. Do you remember him? Remember he used to be on this podcast?
I do. Apparently, power outages or
power outages in Los Angeles have foiled Coach Bishop so that he will miss the end of the final episode.
Either that or he just decided to bounce and this was the easiest way of getting it done.
He just hates Ted Lasso. He's like, I have no love left for the show. And I can't possibly talk about it for one more second. Coach Bishop, if he were here, he would definitely say that it's on brand for Ted to appreciate the handshake from an assistant as much as, any interaction with the billionaire, because for Ted, there's no such thing as a small interaction. That goes right back to our very first episode, boss. Mm-hmm. Our very first recording. Mm-hmm. Ted, I remember Coach Bishop saying, I think Ted would say, like, what is a small interaction? There's no such thing. So he says, why'd you decide to stay? Ted wants to know.
Mm-hmm. And he says, I wish I could say it was because of my feelings for you. But the truth is, I think I need to stop worrying about how others feel about me. I'm staying because it's what's best for me in my personal journey. Which... So I understand why I have mentioned before having issues with platitudes and how they are often insufficient in a lot of circumstances. I was talking this weekend about the idea of he'd give you the shirt off his back. He's such a nice guy. He'd give you the shirt off his back. And I think if you stop to think about it for a second, what's sort of underneath that, number one, does that mean he has a shirt at home? Are we giving somebody credit because they have the privilege of being able to give away things? And we need to keep that in perspective. Number two, it's definitely a man, because a woman can give you the shirt off her back, because a woman giving you the shirt off her back would be arrested for indecency. That'd be a whole fucking thing.
What a hard
invited in by me.
There hey! He is. He's back.
Hiyo. Welcome back, coach. Welcome
hey
back.
There.
So just a lot of what he is doing is recognizing that basing the decisions in his life on other people's wants or needs isn't going to ultimately serve him or the other people. So when he says, I need to figure this out for myself, that focusing on what is best for you isn't inherently selfish. And I think sometimes, especially in our bifurcated sort of way, we say, if you do for other people, that's good. And if you do for yourself, that's bad. And he is figuring out that there is actually the much better middle ground where you take care of yourself so that you can take care of other people.
Yeah, no. This is very well said. It's something I've learned, I think, the hard way, that you have to take care of yourself. I remember growing up, my mom would eat last, and it was like a thing that she would do to be like, oh, look how I love my family. And I naturally adopted it with my family. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
This is like some martyrdom bullshit. Like, this is like some performative. I'm mm-hmm. like, no, I'm like, sometimes when I'm cooking, I'll be like, I do most of the cooking for our family. And I'll be like, no, I'm going to eat some of whatever I'm cooking. So I have the energy to finish the goddamn cooking. Sometimes, especially, I tend to be one of those people where there's like a period. It's like right around dinner time, like between 5 and 5:30, my, I don't know if it's insulin level dips or whatever. I just get worn out, and that's a perfect time. It's usually when I'm cooking. And so you get a little snack, you get a little bite of dinner before everybody else, and all of a sudden you have the energy to push through. So yeah, you do have to. And I like this about what Sam says. Like, I've taken the time to think about my personal journey, and this is the right move. It does not feel selfish.
Sorry. Did you ever consider how it was that Mama Bear's porridge was too cold, even though Papa Bear's was too hot and Baby Bear's was just right?
Right. Yeah. No, I never thought of that, but you're absolutely right. Yeah.
She absolutely didn't eat so that she could get a dish for either one of them.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's very.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, no, I really am. Really,
mind blown.
It's funny that just came up because I'm trying to remember where, but somebody was referencing that story recently and pointed out that we were taught. Was it you?
No, but that might have been on Threads or someplace. Yeah.
Oh, maybe because they pointed out that like we were taught to like root against the Bears when all they were doing was protecting their house. Like, it's our house. It's our porridge. It's our beds. Like, what the fuck's going on here?
What the heck? Like, bitch rolls you into your house and steals your food and passes out in your bed, and we're like, oh, those mean bears? No. Absolute bullshit.
No. Yeah, yeah.
No. This is exactly... look no further than fairy tales. I mean, Jack and the Beanstalk is about a little shit that comes up.
He's an asshole.
Yeah, he's a total asshole. Steals from some giants minding their own business.
Minding their own business. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
So Sam says this very profound thing. Rebecca is kind of just shocked. And Ted says, what here, coach?
So Rebecca sits down. They're right in there when the whole fucking thing blocking. And Ted is processing. That was kind of intense for everybody. He says he might have been talking to you yes, I know that, Ted, which I don't know why I enjoyed that as much as I did, but I very much enjoyed it. And
I laughed out loud. He might have been talking to you when he was looking at me. Yeah,
I got no fucking shit. That's great. And then she frankly inhales the entire flute of champagne.
Oh yeah.
And yes. And Ted says, "Oh hell, you crushed that." Which it just makes me think, like, Ted has had many a drinking night. Like, we are catching Ted on the maybe I shouldn't quite drink as much as I do part of his life, which I've had right. that I've had that phase, so I get it. But he's still, like, he knows the mechanics of it. Like, he knows what to say. He knows how it goes. He knows where beer's headed after that crushing defeat. He knows all of it. And, so you crushed that. Yeah, it was a lot. Sam be all grown up.
Yes, sir. No, it's a powerful moment. Rebecca's going to have to take a beat to absorb all of the ramifications of Sam staying. I think, you know, in that same way, it feels like a lot of people had prepared for the worst with Sam. It's a very difficult offer to pass up, you know, sort of be the hub of a whole franchise. And it's how I prepare my kids. I'm like, assume it's not going to go your way. And then if it does, you know, you'd be happy. I don't know if it's good parenting or not, but it's a trick that I always use where I just say, like, okay, like, I'm not going to slide all my chips in and bank on, like, the best possible outcome happening because it so rarely does. Ted then walks – we cut to Ted walking outside through the gates through the door at that goes to the innards of Nelson Road, and he's out in the parking lot where, I mean, so many things – it's like when – first we saw kind of fell in love with Roy and so many other like great moments in this parking lot. And as he walks,
by the way, past, he also like, waited here for Jamie when Jamie tried just for Flash. Oh. We saw Jamie's potential lasso way goodness, but the exact same configuration now today.
Yes, exactly right. That's right. Trent was waiting here and Jamie almost got away with it and then turned back and was a total early era Jamie Tartt.
That's right.
And Trent says, what here, coach?
Coach Lasso. And Ted's excited. Hey, there he is. I was worried about you. I thought you might have been in a bike accident, which very specific thing to say. But we understand why he might have said that specifically. And then actually, I don't know how to ride a bicycle. I didn't remember that line. It's significant. And then really, that surprises me. Why? Because of the hair and the whole vibe? Yeah, I guess so. Why the heck weren't you at the press conference? Because I am no longer a reporter. I was fired when they found out I revealed an anonymous source. Oh, snap. I didn't say anything, I promise. No, I know, Ted. I did. I'm looking for something different. Deeper. Well, as a man says, you got to follow your bliss, right? Sorry you're out of a job. You know what this makes you now, though, right? Trent Krim, independent. And then Trent chuckles and says, yeah, my father made the same joke. And then the next line made me laugh out loud, which was, yeah, he sounds like a cool guy. No, he does not sound like a cool guy, Ted. He sounds like the fucking opposite of a cool guy. God, I love this man. But it's so funny to me. It's like,
so brutal.
Oh, God, awful. Well, I hope our paths cross again soon, Trent. As do I, Ted. I love our chats. He offers him a ride. Well, I prefer to walk, but I appreciate you. And Ted, good luck next season, he calls after him. They part ways, and Trent goes to open his car and realizes he has locked himself out of his car. He's going nowhere. Interesting.
I mean, I was like, that is such a weird cut. Like, what? I was like, what is the statement? Why? I was like, they just needed an out. And they're like, oh, maybe he locked himself out of his car. Like, okay, yeah, keep that. I'm like, what is – because Trent is like very – he's drawn tight. Like he doesn't, you know, sort of present as a fuck up.
Well, it's interesting.
And it's like, oh, now that he's not a journalist, now everything's going to fall apart for him. I was like, what is the statement here? Anyway,
I'm not sure about that. But I'll – Sometimes I think we do things despite ourselves. And when, you know, you forget something at someone's place or this or that, like, I think we leave there and Trent is at the moment unable to leave Richmond behind. That is what we just said. And I think that's an interesting piece of writing.
Yeah. That's very interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I like that one. I like that take quite a bit. I just thought it would have been like, oh, we would have cut on, oh, why don't we get some Indian food? Or why don't we, like, yeah, I'd like that. And then mm-hmm. I mean, like, there's 100 ways to cut out of this. Mm-hmm. But then we go to black. And I'm like, oh, wow, all right, shit, season's over.
Yeah, no, they really wanted you to know about Trent, what was happening with them. I would only like to briefly, I'm not going to relitigate any of this. I would like to briefly mention that reminded me a lot of the line from Star Wars about how a lot of Bothan spies died in order to get the Death Star plans out. And when you make a sacrifice, the sacrifice needs to be honored. So if Trent was the one that gave Ted the information and then ratted himself out so that it would be on the up and up, I do feel like Ted owed that information a bit more than he did with it.
Yeah. Star Wars, Rogue One.
Huh. You know, that's an interesting angle on that part of the conversation. I hear what you're saying about not relitigating it, but I do think
this but I'm going to do said. It anyway.
No, but
Strap in, America.
But I think, Ted, I didn't think about it that way, but is there a level of, it was done like almost like in vain. Like, I told you what was happening. You allowed the chaos to continue. Trent must know that Nate was on the sideline today. I mean, I don't know. I don't get the sense from this exchange that he's like, what the fuck? What's he still doing working here? But I get what you're saying. I think there's something there.
I don't think it was expressed, but it felt that way for me.
So 5 days later, boss, 5 days later. Oh, and what happens?
God, you're going to make me break the bad news. Keely is moving out of her office at Richmond in order to go form her own startup and be the CEO. Roy walks in. This is the last of it. Just these and Trixabelle. And he says, right, I got you a last day working in the same building present here. And she says, airplane tickets? You got me airplane tickets? Tomorrow Bell. How did you get these actually printed tickets? She said, from my travel agent, Kathy. She's old school. Not like you, Roy. Not like having a travel agent. Definitely Kathy is the one that's old school. Not.
That's really funny.
Roy, are you sure they still take paper tickets at airports? Like, is the plane going to have propellers? Oh my God. Am I going to be able to smoke on the flight? Right. Stop it.
That was great.
That does.
That's funny.
That's very funny.
I have seen.
She's flying in the past.
You still shouldn't smoke on airplanes. I can't believe they tell you to turn off your cell phones, but they used to let you fucking smoke cigarettes on an airplane. It's fine. Fine. Whatever.
That cell phone is
still so, it's a lie. Anyway,
keep going.
It's
a lie.
Right. Stop it. You are missing the point. Tomorrow, you and I are going to a villa by the sea for 6 weeks so you can chill out before you start kicking ass in your new job. And I'm going to take the first holiday since I was a child where I don't have to stay in shape or rehab my fucking knee. I'm going to gorge myself to death on tapas, and it'll take fucking ages. And she says, babe, thank you, but I can't go. But what? Why not? I don't start work in 6 weeks. I started like a week ago. And he says, yeah, I know. That's why I made sure the place had proper Wi-Fi and everything. And you could do your emails and shit. But from the balcony with a sea view. And she says, Roy, I'd love to, but I can't. I just can't. Which is exactly what you want your partner to say when you plan an exciting getaway. We'll talk about this in a second, but maybe 6 weeks is a bit much. Roy, maybe a weekend would have been a better way of starting.
It's a little aggressive.
But then she says, but you should go. And he says, are we breaking up? And she says, no, why would you say that? Of course not. You are going to take a well-earned holiday while I lock myself in a dark room and work nonstop. And I will see you in 6 weeks. And he says, Keely. And she says, Roy, I love you. We'll be fine. I'll see you in 6 weeks. It doesn't bode well for them actually seeing each other in 6 weeks.
Well, It's interesting because I had a lot of reactions to this scene. Because I remember I was more with Roy emotionally. Like, I was feeling his, I guess because he's the one that's hurting in the scene. So I'm kind of like, oh no. And I got where he had been already feeling anxious or whatever the right word is. And this would only add to it. Got that part. I think it's a real, I think it is, it says a lot about how much we bring to conversations in terms of what's being said to us and how we process it, that she could not say anything here that actually was going to help him get rid of the anxiety.
Yes. Yeah. That's in the same way. Right.
She's crystal clear.
Right.
She's not like, you know what, why don't you go, you know, it's like, I will see you in 6 weeks. I love you. Like, it's all, all the right things perfectly said. And he can't hear it. He's like, yeah, that's what you say now. Like, interesting.
Well, because I watch too much TV, I will say that this was already cursed because Diane Chambers said to Sam Malone, I'll see you in 6 months.
Is that real?
That's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's leaving.
These bastards. Mm-hmm. They're so slick with it. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
wow.
We had to know that was not going to be ideal. It wasn't ideal also that Roy allowed his anxiety to convince him to plan the 6 week vacation without consulting her or without considering what
it does.
This was him saying, I'm giving you this great thing. Hang on, please stay here. Please. And it's like, no, right. If you had given her what she needed was a little bit of space right now and your security in the relationship, I think it would have gone way better.
Mm.
I really love hearing both of you have takes on this. I was wounded because I was like, I thought Roy did a really good job. I thought he put a lot of effort. He got the Wi-Fi. He's like, it's not like he's like clueless about what she's up to, but yet still, even with all of that, she's like, for whatever reason, she just can't. And I'm like, man, that's like, cause he put the effort in. He really thought about this.
Yeah.
He, you know, found the right situation. He's like, you're just at your desk at home. I know you started already, but you don't have to be here for this. And then she's like, it was like a non-starter for her. She's like, yeah, no, I can't. I just, in her mind, she couldn't get past it. And she has the right to, you know, make the decision for herself, obviously.
She definitely has the
but
right.
It felt like a rejection.
Right.
Certainly she didn't mean it for it to be a rejection, but it's hard to, it's actually like hyper rational. Cause she's like, well, no, I can't. And that sucks. I don't want to go into why. There's like a million reasons. Maybe it's just she just can't because mentally she needs to be near. Whatever. Who knows? It doesn't matter. But she's like, well, you should go. She doesn't want to limit him. She's actually saying something kind to be like, no, yes. That sounds like you actually just laid out a bunch of things that sound amazing.
Right.
Go do that. Do it for both of us. And but like my priority has to be starting this business. And, but I don't know. It's tough. I know where he was.
Yeah. It definitely could be because I felt from, I think in part it's funny. I don't know that I was in touch with him until you just said that, but there's so much around that I'm aware of around women talking about the guy planning things or thinking through and, you know, and it seemed like he checked all the boxes. Like even when she said, I've been working for a week and he's like, I know, like it wasn't like you have, which,
right.
I could totally see happening even in a solid relationship. So yeah, I guess I was like, oof. Looking at it now, I think I would have, if I'm a diamond dog and Roy brings it to us, I think I say, well, don't go then. You don't go.
Yeah.
Go and both of you can go.
Yeah.
Don't go alone and sit there and be upset.
Or bring a friend. Or bring me. Yes. If I have a beard, I'm like, I have 6 weeks.
You have two tickets. Like, let's go have a romantic.
He leaves the tickets on he leaves the tickets on the desk and growls at Trixie Bell. And I'm like, well, okay, that's the end of season two. But lo and behold, nope. Now 3 weeks later. This is like in the industry, these little car, like this is like sort of a mark of shame. I don't know how to describe, but it's like you couldn't fit it into the main narrative. So now you're like, oh, tack on a few extra bullshit things.
And you keep,
every time. So every time there's a new one, my insides tense up. I'm like,
yeah, I definitely had some of that. Like, now you guys, you know, you're not supposed to be but it's fine. I love Ted Lasso, but yeah, I definitely was aware that, like, what do you mean 5 weeks later, 3 weeks? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. What, and why is it different increment? Anyway, so 3 weeks later, coach, what happens here?
All right. So 3 weeks later, we fade up and Sam Obasanya is staring at something. And then there's a woman standing next to him. She hands him some keys. He pulls out his phone and takes a picture. What's it going to be? I want to know, too. What are we looking at? A Nigerian restaurant. Edwin Akufo planted a seed, and it played out different than he thought. Instead of Sam having to go home, he's going to bring a bit of home to his new home. And that's pretty powerful stuff. So I was like, oh,
and then okay, here that's we go. It for the season. That's it. We go to black. That's it for the season. And
I don't know, coach.
Is that
I see more words. I see more words on the screen.
Oh, no, it can't possibly be. So what do we jump? Five weeks later, three weeks.
And now two months.
Five days.
Five days.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me.
Then
yes.
The 3 weeks. Yeah.
And now, three weeks.
2 months, yes.
Right. And here we go.
No, that can't be. Oh, okay. All right. What happens here, coach?
So we get... Move! I want a faster move! We've got players all in white. It's all very orchestrated, very sharp. Players move when they're told. Coaches are standing and watching. We've got one coach standing in face. Wait, is that Rupert? Rupert comes in and whispers to whoever is supervising all of this. And this person, it's Nate. Nate, the not very great, is now coaching West Ham, and we end the season on a close-up of Nate's barely smirking face. He is fully turned on the good guys, and he is totally on the side of the dark forces.
Dark Lord. Yeah. That is it, ladies and gentlemen. There's no more leaps forward in time.
Yeah.
No more 8 years later. That is the end of season two of Ted Lasso.
It was interesting in how you can get things in because we were so happy for Nate, or I guess we were supposed to be. At the end, at this point, season one, he's just become an assistant coach. I mean, players are actually like lifting him up. There's a whole elaborate, you know, prank to bring back our April Fool's theme. There's this whole elaborate prank to get him and tell him about his promotion. And how far is that from where we land now that he has completely betrayed everything Richmond stands for and is working for Rupert?
Yeah.
That's how coach is going to do it. With the Black Storm, LA Black Storm, oh, yeah. You're gonna betray everything.
Oh yeah, you wait and see. You wait and
what
see.
What else is why? Why even have a team if you're not gonna betray it? That's, you know, that's the best part about sports. Just loving the shit out of something for, you know, like five, 6 decades, and then being like, no, fuck it, I'm just gonna get a new team. I'm just gonna roll. I don't know. Are the Yankees good? Maybe I'll be a fan of them.
Are the Yankees good? That's funny. That's funny. I'm so true to like my own rules around teams. So I officially put the Knicks down because I root for Knicks since I was like a little kid. Like when basketball players were wearing the short shorts. I'm talking about Trent Tucker, Rory Sparrow. Google it, kids. And I finally, with their new ownership, with James Dolan, was like, I can't be a part of this anymore. So I put them down. And they are presently on an amazing run. And I am so happy for every single Knicks fan that has suffered and gone through this. But I have made it clear, like, I cannot hop back on now. He's still the owner. I said I'm out. I'm happy for y'all, but I'm not a Knicks fan right now. I just can't. I can't do it. I cannot do it. So yeah, we all have our rules. We all have our rules.
No, I like it. Yeah, no, you gotta. It's gotta feel right. It's gotta feel. Especially, it doesn't feel right to root for a team of all things. It's such a construct to root for, you know, sports or a team, you know, whatever, a, you know, to jump on a bandwagon if you don't, if your heart's not in it.
Yeah, like, point is, now I'm going to jump around and go, oh, yeah. I'm like, no, no. But I'm happy for that. I'm glad for them.
I like sports. I like sport.
Sport.
I like sport.
Yep.
How do you feel about maths?
I can't get enough.
Yeah, there you go.
Not as much into maths. I have a much larger appreciation for maths since I had a child who likes the maths. Yeah, he was a math prodigy, and has explained it to me in a way that I finally understand maths for the first time in my 50s. It's crazy. They don't do a good job teaching maths. My son always laughs about. He did this great video where he's like, I know everybody hates math, but can you just not hate math? Please don't hate math. He's like, math is great. Math is the language of the universe. When they put you in school and they cram you into a corner with math and they go, oh, you're going to like math. You're going to learn math. Math is important. He's like, that's not math. That's society. You want to be mad at society? That's fine. That's don't be great. Mad at math. Math is beautiful.
That's great. I love every bit of that.
I don't know if I ever shared that video with you, Coach. It is, no, it is fan.
I don't know that one.
It was just like he got frustrated one day and made this little video.
That's so really, really great.
I love it. I love sports. I love Ted Lasso. Always will love Ted Lasso. This is it for our coverage of Ted Lasso. This is our last official Ted Lasso. I never was certain that we would get here to this moment. Coach and boss, I want to thank you for all of the, you know, hours. I mean, luckily we got rich off this podcast.
Thank God.
Oh yeah.
I was so tired of being nice to people.
That was good. Made a lot.
no one will ever wait. I'll never wait for anyone again. Here we go.
Can you imagine? I mean, that's the point. For those, all we do is lose money. But we love it. We love it. It's worth it. The people we've met make it all worth it. Someday maybe we'll break even with this podcast. We are not vanishing. We will finish up Wayne. We have a couple episodes of Wayne, the best probably two episodes. I cannot wait for Boss and Coach to see these two episodes. It's not what you think. I want to thank everyone. So many of you have been with us from the very beginning. Suffering through Boss's laugh, which is it's
horrific.
Putting up with, you know, coaches, let's face it, he's a hard man to like. You don't naturally gravitate toward him. He's not just a lot of fun, smart, funny, engaging. I've been so honored to spend this time with Emily and with Orlando. It is one of the greatest sort of vocational things I've ever been part of. It really means the world to respect the people you work with, and that extends to the family that we've built here on the podcast, our Buttercups, everyone that listens. There are so many of you that are just out there listening every single episode. No matter what we're talking about, sometimes we have very special episodes. Sometimes it's Ted Lasso. Sometimes it's Wayne. We have other shows coming up. But no matter what, we have a diehard audience all over the world, which is crazy. We thought if we had like 200 total downloads in the beginning, we would have been thrilled. And we're counting ours in the hundreds of thousands now. So it's just defies logic, but we're glad that we struck a nerve. We're so happy and honored that you've taken any time of your day to have us in it. And if we've done anything to improve your life with a laugh here and there, or maybe an insight into something you hadn't thought of with one of the shows we cover, that's incredibly gratifying for us. Thank you. We really mean it from the bottom of our hearts. We are not going away. We will be back. We have so much more coming down the pike. But I want to say a heartfelt thank you to the people who have stuck with us. It means everything to us. Okay. Go ahead, Coach.
No, no, I didn't know if you were. I didn't know if you were passing it or if there was. So I just quickly want to say for those of you who may be going through this, you know, long after we've recorded or after we've recorded or playing catch up, obviously you may be a tad confused and not have picked up on the fact that we are finishing season two. There is a season three, but this is the end of our recording of this. But I did want to call out Coach because we give him really at least his share of shit. And I don't know that I ever would have – well, maybe eventually when it became like a big sensation. But I certainly wouldn't have known about Ted Lasso when I did. If Coach doesn't immediately, knowing me and knowing what I believe in and knowing what I'm about, doesn't call me and say, you have to watch this and you have to watch this now. And the timing was amazing. I so needed it. I've talked about that in the season one recordings. And this has been a blast. I actually discovered some things about myself in this process, and I'm really enjoying doing this. So thanks, Coach.
Thank you, Coach. We learned a lot about Boss too. None of it was
fun. I'm just here to watch people.
The blood guy thing was pretty fun. I gotta say that was pretty fun.
Okay, well there was the blood guy wasn't bad. Everything else was terrible. Boss, thank you so much. Thank you for always being the voice of reason. I can't say enough about everyone involved with this podcast. Our editor, Luke, who has slaved away, often waiting on paychecks for me.
He's a hero.
And still never, ever, ever sick at sea. Just the best dude in the world. If you need an editor for anything, if you have a project, hire Luke. Luke Morey, he is... he's one in a million, one in many, many millions. So thank you, Luke. Thank you to our producers. Thank you to everybody who supported us through this process. Thank you to the naysayers who got Coach and I fired up, who told us we were being stupid. Mm-hmm. We never finished this. We have now finished three season show, and we're about to finish a one season show after this. And then we have a couple great things for you. Coach, where do people find you if they want to find you?
Sorry, my mouse was all over the place. All right, here I am. If they want to find me, come check out the community. I mean that. Come check out the community. It is like an extension of that Lasso way spirit, just that you can like inject to any day of your life. So come check us out. Become a buttercup. You'll be glad you did.
Boss, what about you?
The social medias. You can find me at Blue Sky, which is Emily Chambers, and at Threads, which is emily.chambers.31. Forget the first 30. 31 is where it's at.
Love it. Yep. Yeah, no, yeah. The first, that's like, I don't know why they didn't fix it when it was COVID-19. 14 through 18.
Bastards.
Man alive. You're gonna wire this all 220? Yeah, 220, 221, whatever it takes. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. We truly appreciate you. You mean the world to us. Please don't leave us. Stay with us as we finish up Wayne. Stay with us as we move on to, we have a couple of very special episodes and then our next show. We haven't announced it yet because, we are in heavy deliberations. It's a great one that I think we're going to do is an absolutely amazing show. Every bit as great as Ted Lasso and Wayne. And we don't want to waste your time with crappy shows. So we try to pick ones that really matter. Thank you. Thank you for being there for us. You make it all worthwhile. Please support your local libraries and the written word. And until next time, we are...
Richmond.
Till we're done.
Aww.
Oh, till we're done. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we earned that one. I thought you were going to say Richmond till we finish. And then I thought Boss was going to make a phrasing.
Yeah. So we're just not doing phrasing anymore. Okay.
It's not a thing. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. We will be back next time. And it'll be it's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
The TEDcast is a joint venture between Pajiba and The Antagonist. Visit us at pajiba.com and antagonistblog.com.